This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and yes, I can't believe we're here again. Today is our annual back-to-school episode with parenting expert extraordinaire Allison Schaefer, and we also have a fabulous back-to-school giveaway to tell you about. And before we meet Allison, let me tell you a little bit more about her. So as many of you know, Allison Schaefer is an internationally acclaimed parenting expert, speaker. She's a best-selling author and a very well-known media personality. Armed with years of research and clinical experience, Allison presents concepts from depth psychology on stages all over the world. Allison's able to break down really complex ideas and present them in ways that are easy for parents to understand and, more importantly, implement, do something about them. Parents seek solutions, and Allison's real forte is delivering actionable tactics that arm parents with the skills and the confidence they need to face modern life challenges. I also want to say she's so smart. We did a little pre-interview and I just was reminded of how smart she is, how she really gets it. Using humor and relatable storytelling, she provides a fresh and positive understanding of family dynamics. And the end goal is really to raise resilient, caring, and capable kids and have fun along the way, says Allison. Selected as a presenter at the inaugural TEDx Kids in Belgium, she is now a three-time TEDx presenter and author of three best-selling parenting books with HarperCollins Canada. And that's, of course, Breaking the Good Mom Myth, Honey, I Wrecked the Kids, and Ain't Misbehaving. Like a little girl we're going to talk about later on in the show from TikTok, who, oh my God, Amelia, boy, does she misbehave, and I can't get over this kid, and I want to talk to Allison about that. And all of her books, Allison's books, have been translated into multiple languages, including Russian, Korean, Bulgarian, and Turkish. The media loves Allison. She's a media darling. She's a resident parenting expert with regular segments on several national TV and radio outlets and is often quoted in such notable publications as Cosmopolitan Magazine, Real Simple, Parent Magazine, Reader's Digest, The Washington Post, HuffPost, Parents, and more. Besides guest appearances, Allison also created and hosts TV's The Parenting Show and the popular podcast Parenting the Adlerian Way. We always get around to Adler at one point because we have that in common. And by the way, Parenting the Adlerian Way has been voted the number one parenting podcast by FeedSpot. Brands call on Allison for her insights into family life. She's worked with such notables as the Bank of Montreal, L'Oreal, Huggies, Kijiji, Kellogg's, Ronald McDonald House, Earth Rangers, Facebook, Labatt's, and more. Allison is also the parent of two grown daughters, one of whom is a bride and the other one who's about to become a bride. Yay and congratulations. Allison, welcome back to Find Your Bliss. Great to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Do we have any time left to talk? I feel like my bio. That's awesome. Yes, I hear that and I'm like, wow, I've actually done quite a lot. Let me take a pause and have a little moment here. Wow.
Isn't that wonderful? And it's so true. And in a coach-like way, taking that pause is so important. And a lot of us don't do it, right? So you hear it, especially you, because you really have done a lot and achieved. Yeah,
I told you, I took the whole summer off, really. And I said, you were my first kind of getting my feet back into business. So that was really nice to hear that again. Wait, there is a part of me that doesn't just rest and relax.
I love that. And so smart to take some time off too and just relax, recharge, revitalize. That's so important. So Allison, as we talked about before the show, no matter what grade you're in, the start of school is a major transition out of the summer routine to the anticipation of new social and academic dynamics. And my understanding is that parents and caregivers are told to acknowledge those feelings, which will open up space for children to open up to. Can you tell us more of the conversations you should be having with your children, whether they're beginning nursery school, elementary, middle school, high school, or university? Because it is anxiety provoking.
It is, and for a bunch of different reasons. And I guess that's part of the talking about how do we frame a conversation with our kids at any age, is we want to remember that We want to be the best listener that we can be. I think sometimes as parents, we default into being the mentor, the teacher, the one with the wisdom, the experience, and we want to pass that on to our kids, which is very loving and caring. But we really want to start at ground zero, which is finding out what's going on with them. Because if it turns out that we project and think that they're anxious because they're going to a new school and they might not have any friends there, and you remember going and starting a new school and not having any friends, and you assume that that's what they're worried about. And it turns out that no, they're actually worried because they don't want to go to the bathroom in public and someone might look over the bathroom stalls and you're completely worried about the wrong thing. So we always have to start with listening. Yeah. So I think that it always starts with listening. How are you feeling about school? And going at it in a way that is, that kind of projects a positive tone. Because they'll pick up on our energy. So if we think that they should be worried about school, or we don't think they're going to manage school, or we think it's going to be a big transition, and they're kind of like, well, I don't know, I was kind of excited about going to nursery school. You got all weird with the face and started asking me all these questions. Like, is there something I should be worried about? Well, I think we need to listen, but listen with curiosity and listen with that kind of positive outlook and attitude, because I think they'll pick up on that. And I think for probably our youngest people, you know, you don't want to go in too quickly, because if it's a new transition, if you start talking about it too soon, they can start to perseverate, you know, and we're getting closer to the deadline now. So I think it is a good time to start having these conversations. And I think for little kids, they need to kind of do a little mental rehearsal in their mind. So if you can just go to the schoolyard and look around the schoolyard and see where the door is that they're going to go in, and maybe lift them up on your shoulders to peek in the window to see what a classroom looks like.
Yes.
Think about what friends they might walk with so that they know there's someone that is a recognizable face that first day. Talking about all the fun things that happen at school.
Yes.
And so I think, you know, kind of doing a little good old PR piece around that, but then also asking them what kinds of things they're confused about. Now, I think reminding them that kids have been going to school for hundreds of years and that they are no different than any other child that's going to go off to daycare or nursery school. So many people do. And they're made of all the right stuff. And sometimes you want to remind them, and I would say this would go in even to the elementary school kids, think about other first-time experiences that they've had, where they might have had that initial kind of hesitancy, you know, it might not be full-blown anxiety. It just might be, you know, that's human nature to be a little worrisome about the unknown. And we can normalize that for them and remind them of some time that they've actually faced an unknown circumstance and they've overcome it. So maybe it was this summer at camp when they got put in a different cabin, or they didn't think that they would like going tubing behind the boat, and then they turned it to be their favorite thing. Anything where they're kind of overcoming something they haven't done before, an uncertainty, to just to pull on their strengths, you know?
Yes.
So I that's kind of where I would go, Judy, with those kind of younger kids. And I think that it gets a little bit more complicated with the older kids, because I think then they're more verbal. They will or won't share their emotions with you.
You're
kind of available.
Right.
You're more likely going to have social issues.
Right. No, that absolutely. There is a separation anxiety piece, though. That drop off, that first drop off is often a concern for everyone. What are some tips that you suggest to parents on how to help children adapt to the separation and reduce their anxiety?
So before getting into the whole family counseling occupation, I was a nursery school teacher at Ned Leary Nursery School. Wow. And it was often the first time kids had ever been away from their parents. I worked in the 18-month to 2.5-year-old room. Wow. And so in that school, we had something that we trained the parents on in advance of that first day, and it was called the Happy Snappy Goodbye. And so the idea behind the Happy Snappy Goodbye is that you really can't save a child from the experience of saying goodbye to a parent and then having to come into a classroom with new friends and new teachers and new routines. But the longer the parent is there, the longer the child is trying to negotiate to get away from the thing that they're fearing. And what it does is it extends how long they're stressed.
Yes.
They don't really start to get co-regulated and calm down until they actually say goodbye to their parents and get on the other side of the door.
Right.
So where parents are trying with good intention to try to like wait until they're, you know, stop crying or have themselves collected. It won't. It just goes longer. They just think about it longer.
Of course. It prolongs the agony, right? It just prolongs the agony. Yeah.
Prolongs the agony. And so it's hard for the kid. It's hard for the parent.
Yeah.
So we try to say, hey, listen, you know, you've chosen the school. You should be, you know, you need to feel good about the teachers. You need to trust us with your child. Otherwise, why are we doing this?
Right.
And if you've already established that this is the decision you've made, then trust us to help that child get settled into the classroom with all our teacher skills on the other side of the door. And so I would say the faster you can do that drop off, even if it involves, we need to go, can you go to the teacher and hold her hand, or does she need to help you off my leg? Oh, it looks like she needs to help you off my leg. And, totally. But if you're, you know, if you're waiting for your child to be calm, to just walk happily into a classroom, for some kids, that's never going to happen. You might as well homeschool. It's just never going to happen. They have to get over this moment.
Yes, totally. Totally. That's so interesting. So as well, being separated from parents for the first time can be frightening for a child. And there are all kinds of behaviors that accompany this. What are some of the most common behaviors and misbehaviors that you hear about in nursery school or daycare or kindergarten?
Yeah. So for those kids, the prime motivation for children in terms of understanding their behaviors, they want to find a sense of belonging. They're trying to figure out the social setting. Who am I? How do I fit in? Who are my friends? What are we supposed to be doing? And if the teachers are trained and they can kind of guide children positively in that direction and the kids catch it, then that's great. But in the absence of kind of getting it firsthand, first time, which a lot of kids don't, they start to experiment with behaviors. So I'll give you a very classic example. So because kids want to bond and connect and make friends, they might try to play with them. But you know, when you're a little kid, they don't really have a lot of playing and sharing skills yet. So playing might look like ripping the truck out of your hand or picking the truck up and smashing you in the head with it. So we see a lot of biting, a lot of pushing. These are very common ways. And so if you think about it, kids who aren't social would just go sit in a corner. They're actually attempting to try to be social. They're trying to connect. They're trying to learn these skills. And they didn't just bite anyone. They tend to pick someone to bite. And it doesn't mean that they don't like that person. In fact, it's the opposite. It usually means somebody that they actually really like and they're trying to connect with them and right. they haven't figured out how to do it.
Right.
Certainly, sometimes it comes from frustration. They don't have all the verbal skills. But a lot of times those kids will get separated. They'll get labeled as being aggressive. They'll start to get punished. They'll get put in timeout. And they're really kids that need more social skills training. So, you know, we like to do what I call the two-arm technique, where you kind of put the two kids together and you, the little kid who's crying because they just got their arm bit. And they say, did you like that? Even if they're not verbal, I'm still out trying to give them agency to speak up. I'm like, did you like that? Did you like when your friend bit you? And then I would look at the little person who did the biting and say, it looks like your friend didn't like that. Did you want to play with that friend? Are you trying to find a way to play? And inevitably, they're nodding. Like, they do actually want to connect with these people.
Yes.
Say, well, you know what? When you bite them, that makes them frightened. Is there another way you could find a play? Can I? And then I help them. I'm like, I have to show them how to co-play together. How about you take the truck and you can be the gas person who puts the gas in and they can be the person who drives, or you know, you can be the person who washes the dishes and they're the one who brings the fruit from the market. Right. And you have to kind of be in there. You have to spend time with kids. They need a lot of training to figure out how to play. And some of those kids really just get labeled as the, you know, bad kids. And then the teachers start to see them differently and they get treated differently. And then the kids think of them differently and it can really spiral down, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. So they all need to have you in the classroom. You don't do this anymore. You're a parenting expert, but you're not in the nursery school classroom, but you're the one they need.
I know. Well, I will tell you, there's, for teachers that are listening and interested, there are tons of classroom application of Adlerian or positive psychology practices. So I know that you probably have to take your own initiative to go find those books online, but they are available.
I also love when you say positive psychology, because you are such a positive person. And I think that's what makes you so great at what you do, because really, isn't positive psychology all about not what's wrong with the relationship, but what's right with the relationship? And if you start building on with what's right and what's positive, you can only go up from there, right? And that's a great place.
100%. And it really is. So positive psychology is a brand by Martin Seligman. He sort of says he's the father of positive psychology. And I kind of say, well, Adler's the grandfather of positive psychology because so many of those tenets are the same. And positive discipline is a very big brand around the world that was founded by Jane Nelson. And there's positive discipline for step families, for teachers, for toddlers. So that's a really great brand for parents to know about, to get some of these, you know, great details too after this chat.
So cool. So fascinating. I love that that's all part of your thing, not just Adler, but the whole positive thing. So we all need coping strategies. Parents need them, caregivers need them, kids need them. What are some great coping strategies that children and even teens can build into their daily routine to set them up for success? Like just starting off the year with a bang. What comes to my mind always is sleep. Kids not getting enough sleep. And that's a huge, huge important factor, I think. What are some of the other great strategies we can all give to our kids to set them up for success right from September?
Yeah, I would agree with you that, you know, we never really thought much about sleep in the past. In fact, we come from a culture that almost thinks that you're lazy if you need to sleep. And right. If you're taking a nap, what's wrong with you? And you're cutting into productive hours, and couldn't you be earning, you know, another dollar? And couldn't you be learning a third language? And you know,
totally.
And in fact, there's now so much research, and so many people in the mental health and wellness sphere have talked about it as being that's basically like the platform from which all other progress is kind of stacked. And so we really do need to be paying attention and trying to get our sleep. And most kids in North America are not getting enough sleep. And so we really need to take some seriousness into saying, like, what time are we getting up in the morning? What time do we need to go to bed in order to fill that complement? And there is a range, you know, and of course it's much tougher for teenagers because their circadian rhythms shift and they're expected to be at school for a 9 o'clock bell, but their body doesn't really want to go to bed till 12 and one. And then you throw a phone in their bedroom on top of that. Now you got kids gaming and chatting until the middle of the night. And of course they're going to be exhausted in the morning. So I do think that we need to work with them collaboratively. And I think, Judy, this is the point here, which is if you just come down hard saying, we are going to make sure you get your sleep and good night, 10 o'clock. But children in general, teenagers especially, don't appreciate when we impose rules from on high. Mm-hmm. And it's about how we bring about through our communication styles, through presenting ourselves as a parent who is still a leader in the family. Mm-hmm. We still, in the end, have the ultimate say. But yes. The point is we're trying to win their cooperation rather than force their obedience. Because if you take their phone, then they can either have like a complete meltdown. Or I had a client where they just went to their parents' room and stole the charger to their laptop during the pandemic. So the parent couldn't go on all of their Zoom calls.
Oh,
and it was
gosh.
Like, you know, so you don't want to start World War III with your very smart teenagers,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I think talking to them about why we're concerned, talking about what goals they have for the year, using a third party, like I'm much better at sending my kids links like, oh my gosh, I just read this study. Have you seen this? Rather than it coming from my mouth like I'm suddenly some sleep expert, you know.
Right,
they're like,
right.
Now you know everything. So I think, you know, using some of those techniques so that they see that you're an ally, you're trying to help them win. And like, what kind of a school year do you want? What kind of marks do you want? Like, how do you want to feel when you start the day? How do you want to do at your extracurriculars? You know, what things do we want to put in place that support you for that kind of success? Where does sleep fit into all of that?
Yeah.
And so I think you can have a much more mature conversation with a teenager and they're going to see you as an ally who's helping them set up the school year for success according to what they want to accomplish.
Yes.
And then I think the second thing, again, this is crossing all the age groups, which is about, you know, how we make structure in the family.
Yes.
You know, to set our kids up around structure, consistency, the basic expectations. So much of what I deal with parents is they'll say like, oh yeah, well, we started family meetings, but we didn't really finish them. They fell off the radar. Oh yeah, well, we used to have a chore chart, but then I never really enforced it. And, blah, blah. And so right now, everybody back to school is not just back to school for kids. It's back to school for parents. And they're going to be all like, this year, I'm going to nail it. This year, we're doing the family meetings. We're going to have the chore chart. We're going to have the this. All and they tend to get way over enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. And then they bite off more than they can truly manage
totally.
Because we're all busy. And it takes a lot to deal with the pushback and all the things that are involved. And then they kind of get flabbergasted, overwhelmed, and then they drop all balls.
Yes.
So my advice to parents is you got the whole school year. Like, you won't get a family routine that really sticks until we take our December holiday. So don't think you got to have this all mastered by the first day of school. You've got the entire fall to work slowly on these routines. It's consistency. It's saying, I'm not giving up. I'm going to try again. And just picking one thing at a time. So you might say the one thing that's going to really help this year is I really want the kids to be independent around getting up to their alarms.
Yes.
So then what's your strategy for that, right? Make sure they all have alarms. Let them know in advance that you're not going to wake them up. Let them know in advance you're not going to drive them if they miss the school bus. Again, depending on the age of your
kids.
Just pick one thing and think, how much happier would my family be if we didn't fight every morning about getting up? And I'm telling you, within a couple of weeks or a month at least, you're going to get that one nailed. And then you're never probably going to have that problem ever again.
Yes.
Whereas parents try, they stop, they start, they're consistent, they're not consistent, they, you know, and the next thing you know, you've been waking your kid up on and off and getting angry and fighting until they're in grade 12. And you're like, really? Are we still doing this?
So do you feel the best way to enforce that is to not go and knock on their door and say, get up, get up, get up, let them be independent about it. And if they miss the school bus or their Lyft or their whatever it is to get to school, so be it. Is that the way to handle it?
Yeah. I mean, again, it depends. I always want to be developmentally appropriate. So we like to sit down with the kids and say, what does the morning routine look like? And, you know, I was just working with a family yesterday who, I don't know, they bought online some little thing that's a schedule. And I said, great, but also get one for you. And what I mean by that is, so your child sees, my job is to put breakfast on the table at 8 o'clock and then to take it off at 8:30. It's not my job to get you there to eat it, but look on my task list. At 8:30, I'm going to be clearing the table. At 8:45, I'm going to be driving anybody who's in the car. You know, at 8:46, you know,
I'm out. I'm doing Pilates.
Right. Yeah, right. And so, you know, with little kids who aren't really time sensitive, I might give some prompts like, hey, I'm just looking at the clock. You know, it says it's 8:45. We've got one more minute to get our coats on, or, you know, breakfast is coming off the table in 3 minutes. So I don't mind giving like a little time prompt for kids, but I am not nagging. I am not reminding, and I am not delaying. Like, I'm quite happy to say the car is leaving. The food is done.
If you set that boundary, you know, I think kids need boundaries. We talked about this on the phone the other day. They actually might fight it, but once they're enforced, they go, yes, I'm so glad these boundaries are here. Right.
Also, can I tell you that if you look at children, to your point about the children in the classroom, they don't seem to have, it's very rare for a child to have the same, you know, they like school because you come in, you put your coat in the cubby, you go get your puzzle, you sit in circle time, you know, we all flash the lights and then you put your puzzle away. Everything is spelled out. And so that they know exactly what they're supposed to do, when they're supposed to do it, and it's consistent. And at home, we're kind of like, you know, come on, let's go. When are you going to go? You know, and they're like, it's not time to go. She's not yelling at 130 decibels yet. But we would do so much better if we just kept moving through the schedule the way a teacher does, because she can't move 28 kids or 21 little kids in the same way that one parent can acquiesce and wait for some kid who doesn't want to put on his pants.
That is so smart.
It never happened in a classroom when you think like a group. That's why I love, you know, people with big families. You got 10 kids. You're not sitting there waiting for them to put on the pants. No, and they know it. And they know it. They feel it. You're part of a group. So we got to get that idea of, I'm here to be a helper, but only between this time and this time. And then I'm moving on and you can figure out what you're going to do with or without me.
We lead
that way.
Brilliant. So Allison, schools are increasingly incorporating mental health into their daily agendas. I love this because I'm a mindfulness, you know, meditation person. So mindfulness, like, what are some of the things that kids need to do to be calm? Do you believe in children meditating or learning how to meditate, meditating as a family, or just going for a walk and being mindful? And how can that help set them up for success as well? Don't answer that just yet. We're going to go on a short commercial break. More with Finding Your Bliss when we come back. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740. And just before the break, I was asking, what are some of the things that kids need to do to be calm, and how can that help set them up for success as well?
I think that maybe one of the big takeaways for all the terrible things that happened during the pandemic is we really did see a mental health crisis with kids. We're still not recovered from that. But the difference is now there's resources. We're more invested now. It's like we can't not see what's been happening. And so we are doing better at trying to address the issues with children and mental health, and that all stakeholders are involved. And so that includes the classrooms. That does include our parents, our governments. So this is good news. I would say one of the most important things is to remember that there's an evolutionary piece to this. We were never meant to go this fast. Kids were meant to go slow, to be in nature, to be with their primary attachment figures, to learn through mentorship and experience, not off an 8.5 by 11 sheet. They need to be with people. And so slowing down the pace of life so that they can be present, so that when they look at that dandelion and it catches their attention, they can spend their 15 minutes plucking all the little petals off and not say, we got to go, go, go. We're going to be late for the bell.
Right.
So we have to make space. We have to make space for it. And parents are very, very busy, and they don't show up very mindfully.
Mm-hmm.
We were just talking about this woman, Maria, I think her name is Rebecca, I'm sorry if I'm getting that wrong, but she, in 2010, she had a display, like a living art display at MoMA in New York City. Wow. And the whole thing is that she would just sit in a chair and people lined up overnight in sleeping bags outside. And all she did was to just look in their eyes.
I just got the chills. I love that.
And people would weep and cry, and they wanted this experience.
Wow.
And it just goes to show you, because parents are always like, well, what do I say? I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do with my kids. I'm like, when we talk about being present, imagine just sitting down and doing nothing but looking into the eyes of another person. And just that's the only thing you're intended to do. And there's so much bonding. And they put her and other people in MRI machines, and the brains are just going crazy with their connection. You know, there's lots happening in that silence, but it's quiet, it's present, it's peaceful. So if parents can think about where do they have that time to shut off everything else and just really just be with their kids, not multitasking, not talking about what did you do at school while you're trying to get dinner on the table, you know, to make space so that when kids are curious and wondering and you can kind of follow their lead, which I think is maybe a way of saying it, Judy, is like, I think that's where sometimes grandparents have a role, because grandparents aren't trying to raise their kids and get to work, and they kind of bring a presence that has a different energy.
Yes.
So sometimes I think about how could I step into my grandmother energy instead of my mom, the manager energy, and try to
nice
my grandmother.
That's fabulous.
And that grounds me. And when it grounds me, then it grounds my kids. So I would definitely say that being mindful, being present, making space, allowing exploration. There's many ways for kids to do meditation that isn't necessarily an adult version of meditation. Mm-hmm. You know, you got a kid that's like all skiddly-do and want the wiggle, and he'll never sit cross-legged and, you know, shut his eyes. I don't think that's what meditation needs to look like. You can have, like, I do think that part of meditation is that mindfulness. So like walking in nature and paying attention to birds is just as valid as a mindfulness meditation for a child as I think, you know, sitting there with your mountains up. But I do think breathing is an important one. I think kids tend to, you know, breathe on the top of their chest, and I think really great for them to do some belly breathing. You can put a stuffed animal on their tummy. Well, you must know this, Judy, you teach this, but you know, you put a little stuffed animal on their tummy and get them to move their tummy up
their
and
diaphragm,
down.
Of course.
Yeah. And so that will kind of slow down their nervous system. Yeah.
So great. Wow. Such valuable, valuable tips. I just love it. One of the things that shocked me, Allison, was when we were in the virtual green room the other day, you mentioned that middle school kids have been acting like high school kids and shocking their parents with drinking and all kinds of other behaviors that are really concerning and not expected at such a young age. Can you say more? Middle school, like what is going on?
Yeah, I mean, it's just my experience working with parents over these past 20 years that they generally tend to be shocked. Like, not my child. And it's because they knew it was coming down the pike and they knew that this word teenager, but in most adults' mind, they really think that adolescent behavior starts in grade 9. But adolescence actually starts at 9. It's early adolescence, but it's still considered adolescence. And so a lot of the tomfoolery that goes on that parents thought that they were going to be able to like get adjusted to or get ready for, like, okay, I know my kid's probably going to try alcohol, but they're thinking it's going to happen at the grade 10 prom. Later. So when they have their grade 7 kid, you know, throwing up in their basement, you know, because they stole a bottle at the sleepover, they're like absolutely shocked that this innocent child of mine would be doing these things.
Right.
But what I find is that they just really want to grow up and be mature, and yet they have no prefrontal cortex to be able to manage any of these things.
Right.
And so they make the worst mistakes.
Right.
So a lot of the really, you know, tough stuff that a parent's going to have to deal with is probably coming down the pipeline sooner than they think.
Right.
And I find that, you know, not to ever let your guard down. There's always parenting to be done at every stage of the life cycle. But just to let parents know, it's probably going to start sooner than you think. So, you know, start having those talks.
When does that prefrontal cortex, because I know 40-year-olds, so I don't think I'm right.
Fair enough. I'm not going to lie about that. Not everybody does fully mature because, you know, there are people that have a lot of delayed development because of their own mental health issues.
Yeah,
so that's
fair.
But I would say, like, we used to think that we've learned more information about the brain, and we do realize it takes longer to get into the adult state. We always have neuroplasticity. There's always ways that you can rewire your brain, which, you know, that's part of why mindfulness meditation is so amazing. It actually does rewire the brain.
Yeah.
So we know that it's a use it or lose it system, but there is these neurological bursts. And we know that there's one that happens at birth. That's when the brain is making so many neural connections. And then it does some parsing because it needs to be efficient. It tries to make these more efficient bundles. And that's when it's sort of like the brain kind of goes offline. It's sort of under construction. Mm-hmm. And that sort of is what you're going to start seeing in that middle adolescence that you're going to see in grade school and kind of grade 9, grade 10. But that process will go all the way through till about 21.
Yeah,
21,
at least. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So many things to talk about. Just briefly, homework, how do we stop it from becoming a nightly power struggle? Is there any way to make homework more enjoyable from the get-go once homework starts for kids?
Yeah, I mean, so I have to preface this by saying, again, like, I'm not a fan of homework. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of research that shows that most of the homework that gets assigned to our kids actually hinders their learning. Like, not only doesn't help, literally sets them back. So I do think it's worth parents looking at some of the research on homework.
Yeah.
So at the youngest of ages, a lot of like the stuff that they're just trying to teach, like independent learning. Mm-hmm. And so really, I want my kid to have independent learning, like learning how to just take the homework, put it in your knapsack, take it out of your knapsack, spend a minute on it, put it back in the knapsack, get it back to school the next day.
Right.
That's a lot of work for grade 1 and grade 2.
Totally.
But mostly, if that's what the teacher's trying to teach, and then the parent takes it out of the knapsack, the parent sits with the child and does the homework, the parent puts it back in the knapsack. Now they haven't learned it. They're going to go to grade 3. So at some point, we have to break it down into these little micro skills. So I do think there's lots to be learning in the early years. I worked with a family. They had a child that was like on the autism spectrum disorder, but he was very social, you know, very, very social. And he really had a hard time academically. And I said, yeah, because he doesn't want to do homework alone. He needs a study group. Can he have the friends over and you put on some popcorn and, you know, some music and they can all do their homework? He did great when he had other people around him. So this whole like, sit still, go to a carousel, don't get distracted. That doesn't work for everybody. You got to know your kid. You got to trust some of your parents' spidey intuitions about things like that.
Isn't that smart?
I really
love
kids to have agency. I know in my family, I said, hey, listen, at the time when my kids were going to school and having more intense homework, I was getting my master's degree. And I said, I will bring my homework to the table, the dining room table, and I'll be there for a couple of hours. And if you want to join me and you want to ask me a clarifying question or work alongside me, that's, and again, kids are so social, and because I had a good relationship, they weren't, you know, trying to avoid me.
Sure.
And then that became kind of homework time.
Lovely.
And they kind of learned to move into that time zone because that was when it felt actually more fun for them. I wasn't available to do other things anyways. So I think saying when and when you're not available and not being held a hostage. A lot of kids, their parents will say, oh, they could have done this in 5 minutes. Why did it take an hour? And they're getting up and down and up and down. Well, part of it is because for that hour, they're holding you hostage and you're not paying attention to some sibling. And so it becomes one-on-one time and they don't want it to end quickly. So yes. Just watch, pay attention to whether your kids are getting a secondary gain from forcing you to hover over them to keep them doing their work because they actually like you there.
Right. Isn't that fabulous? Just fabulous advice. Can you speak, Allison, to some of the academic pressures kids are facing these days? Like whatever happened to just enjoying the glee club or being involved in the yearbook or being involved in sports and varsity, what's going on? Is it that academic pressures are just too high these days?
Yeah, I really wish we could change the cultural narrative because right now in North America, it's worse in the States, but Canada kind of lags behind and kind of makes the same errors as the US often when it comes to this stuff. And we have this scarcity mentality. You know, that only the creme de la creme that rise to the top are going to get into the select university and everybody else is going to be living, you know, in a cardboard box under the under a bridge.
Right.
And
right.
It's just not true.
Yeah.
So I think that when we start freaking out that if my kid doesn't get A plus in every single subject matter, that they are destined to suffer, and as opposed to, well, so, you know, maybe you don't get into your first university of choice, or maybe you pull up your socks in the last year, or you take a summer course, or there's so many. I've had people that you know, they're 22 and they say, oh, now I finally figured out I want to be an airplane mechanic, but I'd never got my grade 12, whatever. So they go back and they get it then. So life is long. Like, let's stop being so panicked. And the ones that are the most panicked, when I ask them, well, how are their marks? And they'll say, like, well, they're in the 90s. I'm like, why are we talking about this?
Right.
But a lot of these kids have their lives mapped out from the time they're in kindergarten. They have a plan on how to get into Harvard or Yale that is established by their parents. And often in the US, you hire an academic coach that will put you through the whole thing. And so you don't take a sport because it's fun. You take a sport because that's going to look good. It's going to get you a scholarship, or it's going to get you, you know, better eyes on it. And so everything has become a competitive pursuit. And then that pits friends against friends. So there, you know, house league becomes something that people don't do anymore. And if you're on the teams, then you're competing for positions. And so that fun, the pep rally, having as much fun being in the stands, cheering for your team as it is being on the playing field.
Yes.
We don't really have team spirit anymore. And we don't have a lot of these other activities like the photography club and the yearbook club and things, because the teachers aren't being paid enough to do extra things and champion those initiatives. So school used to be the society outside of your home. It's the second society that you join before you join the bigger community.
Totally.
And they've really become deserts. They're just ABCs, 1-2-3s, get smart and compete and get your resume ready. And we're really missing a lot of these other developmental pieces, these social pieces, these, you know, like giving up band and giving up gym, like for some kid that the only thing they're going to be good at is physicality or music, and those things are taken away from them. Really, it's really misguided.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is such a serious problem.
And same with part-time jobs. Everyone's like, oh, well, if they work, they can't study. I think a part-time job is one of the best things you can do for a kid.
Yes, I agree. I was going to ask you about that. Part-time jobs, it doesn't matter what it is. It could be, you know, what happened to the newspaper route? Like it's just something that you do. You feel good. It gives you self-esteem. It gives you some of your own money. Do you believe in allowance for kids? Is that something you believe in? We're going to hear all about that when we come back after this short commercial break. We'll be right back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
We are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio. I want to give a shout out to our esteemed segment sponsor, Ashford Cleaners. We want to thank Ashford Cleaners for sponsoring this segment of Finding Your Bliss. Ashford Cleaners is Toronto's best dry cleaner with hand-finished detailing, laundry, expert tailoring, you name it, and they'll take care of it while always going the extra mile to make sure you leave with a smile on your face. And they also offer you free pickup and delivery, so it's easy to keep your entire closet ship-shape and ready to go. Thanks, Ashford. Just before the break, Allison, I was asking you, do you believe in allowance for kids?
100%. And I'll tell you why, Judy. But allowance is financial literacy, right? Mm-hmm. Kids learn contextually. How are they going to learn how money works unless they have some money to learn the skills with? Mm-hmm. So to me, you know, it's an essential part of parenting. If parenting is described as preparing your children for the adult life in which they're supposed to participate, and you just think that your education is just giving them money, like that's what you taught them. So of course they're going to come around and say, buy me a house, pay for my car. Like that's right, why they haven't learned anything.
Right.
They haven't learned budgeting. They haven't learned the value that, you know, you can order in a pizza or you can buy a frozen one. One costs $23, the other costs $6.99. It just takes 20 minutes to cook. That's actually faster than the delivery time. So there's a million life lessons that are tied into financial literacy, but they can't start unless you give them some money. So I think one of the mistakes that parents make is that they really just have a paradigm that's misinformed that sort of says you pay kids for chores. Mm-hmm. Like if you make your bed, I'll give you a dollar. That's how you get your allowance. If you don't make your bed, I don't give you the dollar. But that is not how allowance, that's not how I'm suggesting allowance works at all.
Right.
That is based on an economy. In that case, a token economy. That's like, that's what they give people in jail and like halfway houses where they're trying to control behavior, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
Immediately makes you out to be the authority figure manipulating them. And you know, what's going to happen is grandma's going to give them 10 bucks for their birthday and they're not going to make their bed because they don't need the money. And you're like, that's not the point. I was trying to get you to make your bed.
Yes.
So in an economy where you have a job, you get a paycheck. But that's an economic arrangement. That's a different social grouping. Mm-hmm. In a family, you're a social grouping and we don't pay each other. We have expectations of how we treat each other and how we support the group. And that does not work on a money system.
Right.
It's a different organization. If you start introducing money, then you start to erode the relationships. That's exactly what you don't do. It sullies things. Mm-hmm. So yes, my kids got allowance and yes, my kids did chores. But they were never
the twain
tied
never to met. They were two separate entities. Brilliant.
No, I said, send me a budget of what you think you need and defend it. So, nice. And if they said, like, well, you know, I need $20 a week for candy, I'm going to defend that. Let's talk to your dentist. Let's talk to your doctor. Let's see. I'm okay with $1 and you buy it Friday at the convenience store on the way home. And my kids started with gum from the convenience store. Less gum. And they bought their own juice at swim lessons because they could put the money into a little vending machine and their little donation when the plate went around at church. And those were the three things that made up my kids' allowance for years. And then we added scholastic books and then we added miscellaneous toys. Like we kept building up. And a lot of their friends said, you're really spoiled. You get so much allowance. And what they don't understand is I didn't pay for anything else ever. Huh. Like if ever.
They learned. And this seems to be a through line of what you're saying, Allison, is encouraging children to become independent learners, encouraging kids to develop independence from the get-go. You know, and this even happens when we talked about homework, but you talked about the science fair, how they stopped doing science fairs because the parents were doing all of the work, right? They were doing everything. So what was the point? The kids weren't learning and they've actually cut it, which is so sad because what a great.
It is sad. And, you know, and there are some brilliant kids doing brilliant things. Like I've gone to some of these coding camps and like kids are brilliant if we would give them space, but we're so busy in our own ego thinking that we still have to like teach them and step in. And we're so phobic of mistakes.
Yes.
And if we think there's like a better way to do it or whatever, we're really not good with imperfection. And then we wonder why our kids get anxiety. It's like, well, you know, you've told them you can't make a mistake. Everything has to be perfect. Everything has to be an A. That's not really good conditions for learning because learning is about curiosity. Learning is about making a bunch of mistakes and learning from your mistakes. And again, childhood is where we're supposed to make all those mistakes in a loving environment with unconditional love from a parent who says, you know what? Pick yourself up, brush yourself off, get back in the game, as opposed to, what did I tell you? You know, getting all punitive. And then all they do is they don't want to try. They stop, they shut down. And how can you be creative and how can you learn when you're in fear of judgment.
Yeah.
So we do that inadvertently, thinking that we're motivating our kids, thinking that we're pushing them to excellence. And for some of those kids squeak by, but it comes with this hidden cost of worry and anxiety and perfectionism and overachievement that will dog them. They'll end up, I'll talk to them when they're 40 in therapy.
Right. And what is this thing? Is it that parents are helping kids with their homework more? Because it seems to be more of a trend that in the olden days, you did your own homework. That was it. You go upstairs to your room and you do your homework. But now there's so much help with projects and exams and all of this stuff and studying that kids don't ever develop that ability. Is this a common trend of parents being too involved?
Yeah. So, you know, I would say as a cultural trend, our parents now are over-functioning. Mm-hmm. So whether you call that the bubble wrap, the helicopter, the snowplow, we got so many names for this. But parents are over-functioning. They have a general mistrust that their kids can manage life. They infantilize them. They think that, you know, without me, how could you possibly manage?
Right.
They step in and they rescue, they oversee. And I believe our culture has told parents that that's part of their job description. And that they would be bad parents if they didn't. And if all the other parents are helping their kids with homework, if I'm the only parent who doesn't, they're all going to get 90s and my kid's going to get the 70.
Right.
So again, it goes back to that competitive mindset. But what we know is that if parents overfunction, you invite underfunctioning from your children because you're overfunctioning. It's kind of like, oh, someone will remember my lunch. There's a safety net that is so close to them that they don't learn to be problem solvers. They don't, you know, the parents will say, you would never remember, you know, to bring home your homework if I didn't remind you. But isn't it the opposite? If I never reminded you, you would exercise your remembering muscle.
Yes.
You'd learn to put stickies in your locker. You'd be so frustrated that you failed the test because you left the textbook and without me driving back to get it, you'd go, I'm never letting that happen again.
Right, exactly.
So we interfere with the reality of life. And that's why kids don't learn. And then we blame them for not being competent.
Right.
Well,
right.
I think we participated in making them not competent.
Right.
We got to own that.
We got to own that. There's a kid on TikTok. We referenced this at the beginning, named Amelia. She's only 7 or 8 years old. Her mother is sometimes identified as Stormy Lee or Ashley Vlas. And the videos typically feature her acting out in exaggerated ways, yelling, disrespecting authority, throwing stuffed animals at her mother, it's shocking to me. What is going on with this thing? Is this just a big act? And if not, what is wrong with this mother? Why is she not putting her foot down?
Yeah, a couple things there, Judy. One is, it really bothers me when a child is having a dysregulated moment, no matter how bad it is, or in whatever. And the parent's response to that is to capture it on film. And I've had parents do this as a discipline technique where they say, I'm going to film this and show this to your teacher. It's humiliating to, like, and I know that they're used to being on camera all the time, but the fact that it's being recorded, I think is horrible. We shouldn't be seeing any footage of any of that. So totally. That I think is, so A, the kid is obviously dysregulated. And what I would say from your description that has what we would call an sense of entitlement and entitled attitude.
Yes, yes.
We call that pampering. And it's important for parents to know that pampering has nothing to do with your socioeconomic status. This is not just because of the Jacob little purses or whatever she's buying. It's kids who feel, I get what I want when I want it. That is an entitled attitude. You can have that at any socioeconomic status. Mm-hmm. And it comes from the fact that she hasn't been properly trained, and that I train as disciplined, to be a part of a group and to understand you may always get a say, but you do not always get your way, right? So if it's like sometimes for dinner, you get your favorite chicken fingers and French fries. Sometimes for dinner, you get salmon and rice.
Broccoli, yeah.
And so, yeah. You know, we will try to accommodate people's tastes, but you don't always get your way. And I'm not going to make salmon for me and chicken fingers for you. So she's not been trained to be a part of the group, to accommodate other people's wants and demands. So she has learned that I should get what I want. I should be able to put my foot down. And when you deny me, I'm going to protest.
Yes.
Chances are, and again, I haven't seen how the mother's behaving, but like I said, the fact that she's recording her child, children learn to be rude by being treated rudely themselves. Mm-hmm. So basically the child is saying, well, if it's good enough for you, it's good enough for me. If you're going to yell at me, I'll yell at you. If you're going to scold me, I'm going to scold you. So they're both being disrespectful. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so mom needs a lot of support here, but at 7 or 8, there's the good news is, things can always change. No one is fated to be like this for the rest of their life. Good parenting classes or getting some counseling you know, doesn't need, the child doesn't have to go to counseling. Just the parent can learn some parenting skills, take an online course, and things could turn around like so quickly. Seven, totally. 8 year olds change so quickly. Not so much 40 year olds are harder to change,
right.
But kids change quickly. That is a solvable problem. True.
Well, they're talking about military college in the comments. So I don't know what's going on there, but
classic because when that's the thing, when the pendulum swings, yes. From the parents having all the power,
yes.
And then the child has all the power, they think the remedy is give all the power back to the parents. Well, now we're just flip-flopping on a teeter-totter.
Right.
I want the middle solution, which is mutual respect,
yes.
And good leadership.
Yes, I love that you said that because you had mentioned to me before the show, Allison, that respect used to flow upwards. Kids were seen but not heard. Now the pendulum has swung too far the other way and parents are afraid to be firm and they're too lenient. So you're right. We've got to find the balance. The military college is just them taking back all of the control and that's not going to work either. Phone time, phone addiction, very briefly, because it is a very serious problem, not just for kids in middle school, high school, university, but I think even for parents of those kids, this dopamine addiction in our society is not a joke. And I want to tell you, I'm guilty of it too sometimes. How do we break this phone addiction?
Yeah, I mean, it is a big concern and there is no family that isn't facing this. You know, I mean, it really is a new element to family life now. And again, I'm going to go to not like having one size fits all for all families. I don't think that's appropriate, but I would say the approach, I'm still going to go with the same approach, which is you want to work with your children while you're making those boundaries and making those agreements. And it's how you make the agreements. It's how you get them to see some of this common sense. So it's really in the methodology of how you're communicating with it, where you're holding your authority without getting the pushback and the rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes some pretty sophisticated talents. But I would say one thing to your point is, first of all, modeling it and saying, hey, listen, I'm having trouble with this too. This is AI and designers against the human brain. Like we're always going to lose. I'm in the same boat as you.
Yes.
And so things where you can say like, what could we all do together? What would be one small thing that we could do together? Like, what if we agree just never at the dinner table? What if we put it aside when we're doing board games? There's like a Pomodoro method that sort of says you can focus for 20 minutes and then you need a break.
Yes.
So it's like, could you do 15 minutes? Could you do 10? And then you get your phone as your reward, but really trying to not multitask. So I think if you can gamify it and feel like an ally and kind of make some fun challenges with each other. Cause of course, you know, the kids, they love it when you get it wrong. Hi, mom's at it. You on the phone. But I think you want to come at it with that approach, as opposed to coming down with the heavy hammer.
So school supplies, this is a back to school thing. You said a wonderful thing to me before the interview, which is there's always going to be a new calculator. This one doesn't do cosines, for example. And your suggestion is just do a little inventory. And your great suggestion is give your kids gift cards to a great back to school supply store, wherever you're going, and give them a card and a budget. Just say a little more on this. What do you suggest about that? Just how does that gift card help?
Yeah. So what I like about the gift card is it goes back to the financial literacy. If you've already written down what you're willing and not willing to pay, replace, or get, and you make a reasonable budget together, and then you get a gift card, you're not going to be fighting in the store. The kids love getting a gift card. You know, to them, it's like a credit card. They think it's so grown up. But it also means they get to decide, you know what? I don't think I really want this new thing if I can get this fancy binder. Or if I don't get the fancy binder, I get the cheap one that's the house brand, then I can get the nicer knapsack.
Right.
You've already made the budget. Let them figure out the details. It's so empowering to them, and you will not fight and you won't go overspending.
That's so great. So Allison, you remember when Lily was going off to do her master's in New York City in musical theater, and you went through that with me, and Max going off to McMaster. How can parents prepare teens emotionally for leaving home and starting university? Just briefly, what are your top tips on, because that's hard not only for the kid, but also for the parents who might become empty nesters for the first time.
Yes. And this generation, again, because of the pandemic, they are like a little bit more immature and they've been more supported. So I would definitely say that you want to keep contact with them in the form that they want to keep contact. That might be Snapchat. Like I Snapchat with my kids as their primary. We text too, but I would say stay in contact with them. Make sure, again, positive attitude, But I would also get them knowing that they're whatever campus that they're going to, that there's also mental health professionals. And if they're feeling strained, if they don't want to talk to mom about their problems, they can always go, you know, check in with the mental health counselor.
Yeah.
But I would just, so long as you're in kind of regular communication.
Yeah, I was going to talk to you about grandparents and you kind of did already. But, and I think your point was wonderful, is try to just morph into that grandparent mindset sometimes, because it's a really good one. It's a unique role that that person can play, like being a safe, less judgmental sounding board, right?
Beautifully said, Judy. Yep.
Is there a single best golden nugget that you want to impart to parents, grandparents, how to prepare children of all ages, nursery to university, on how to make that transition back to school in a way that will be meaningful, fun, healthy, and maybe even blissful?
One, yeah, you tasked me with a big one there. Well, I think that I would say, like, my favorite initials are TTFT, take time for training. Just slow it down, slow it down, parents. Everything can be overcome if you take it by baby steps and you chip away at it consistently. So realize, until you train them, they won't know and they can't know, and that's our work to do. So so start with the training, and whether that is the kid who needs to figure out how to put on their own jacket, or that's the child who needs to remember to bring home their homework, or that's the kid who needs to learn to do their homework at university because you're not there to look over their shoulder anymore, whatever it might be. The take time for training and having the patience and realizing we learn from mistakes. We don't learn from doing it right. We learn through the sloppiness and the messiness of life. And that is the reality of life. So get comfortable with it.
Wow. You're the best. Allison, I've asked you this question many times before. What is bliss these days for Allison Schaefer?
Oh, well, bliss is, I've got two kids. One got married in May, and I've got two weddings coming up, my nephew and my daughter. So I'm planning the second wedding of the year.
That's so great.
They're wonderful partners. And, you know, there's nothing more gratifying as a parent when you see your child grow up, become an adult, and then pick a wonderful partner, and you go, I made a pretty good thing. All the credit, but it is pretty,
it's congratulations. Pretty isn't amazing. That wonderful? So enjoy every minute. I love that. What is the best way, Allison, for people to contact you, connect with you on social media, buy your books, do all of that?
All the good things are all located on my website, which is allisonschaefer.com. So you get all the links to all those other assets and properties. So join me there. And that's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you.
It's always so wonderful. It's just an honor to have you every year. We're going into year 7. I can't believe it. I know.
How can it be, Judy?
I know.
Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, Allison. God bless. You're the best. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
Each week we spotlight a fabulous person like Allison Schaefer, and she is fabulous. And I know you'll all agree with that, who is living their bliss. So if you're an author, artist, yoga, meditation, mindfulness expert, a therapist, a life coach, an artist of any kind, anyone who is living their bliss, we'd love to hear from you. We also love to feature singer-songwriters and musicians on the show. So if you're one of those, write to us at fyb@findingyourbliss.com. And I'm also on Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app. And all you have to do is search up Judy Liebrack. And of course, you can always follow us at The Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. In Bliss News, we are so excited to announce our jam-packed back-to-school giveaway, thanks to Madoko, Tite Books, and Best Buy Canada. One lucky winner will take home a 350 prize bundle, including, from Madoko, $200 worth of premium art supplies, fine tech pearlescent watercolors, Faber-Castell sketching markers, and a large fluid cold press watercolor pad. From Tite Books, a $100 gift card to this beloved independent bookstore. And from Best Buy Canada, a $50 gift card to stock up on the latest tech. Entering this exciting giveaway is easy. Just visit @TheBlissMinute on Instagram and like and save our giveaway post. Tag your friends in the comments and make sure that you're following @MadokoToronto, @TiteBooks, Best Buy Canada, and @TheBlissMinute. The contest closes Tuesday, September 16th at 6 p.m. EST, and the winner will be announced on our Instagram page on Wednesday, September 17th. Don't miss your chance to win. Enter today and get ready for some back-to-school bliss. I'd like to thank our wonderful guest, Allison Schaefer, for being on the show today. Also, thank you to Meg Ruffman, Siobhan Kiley, producer Chelsea Lockstedt, producer Eva Shabbatai, Olivia Vigiani, audio engineer Juliana Yannicello, senior editor Lauren Kavinsky, video editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, audio producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center, and also to our segment sponsor, Ashford Cleaners. For everyone here, I'm Judy Liebrack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.